Welcome back to Lions Collective. We're live on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. I am your host, Jeff Iafredi from Crunchtime Sports. We got Justin Rogers, Detroit Football Network, Colton Pouncey from The Athletic, and of course, Will Birchfield, 97.1 The Ticket. He is in a new location, I believe, from last week, and his mic is working. So we're ready to go today.
Big news. Same location, but on time.
Yes, that's, you know what? We love to see it, especially for this episode. The Lions have, at least we've confirmed they're in the process of hiring a new offensive coordinator. We talked last week of Mike McDaniel and different names that we like to see. And Drew Petsing is the name. He was the offensive coordinator for the Cardinals last 3 years. Obviously has some ties to not only, you know, Hank Fraley on the Lions staff, but Ben Johnson. They have a long-standing history together, and he fits a lot of what the Lions want to do offensively, at least from an ideology perspective. And I know fans have been kind of waiting for your guys' perspective, which they can go check out what you guys are doing besides Lions Collective for that. But just for your guys' thoughts, what is your initial reaction to the news? Because I think many Lions fans, at least when it was announced, were upset because – it was a name that did to fans came out of nowhere, but the Lions have already spoken to Drew Petsing prior, or like a week prior, and Jared Goff spoke to him. But what do you guys think of the hire, or at least the process of hiring Drew Petsing?
Look, I don't know what kind of overlap your Crunch Time Sports audience is with the Lions Collective, but I heard you might have fallen in that camp of being upset. Some people might have texted me. The words "crash out" might have been involved.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think I would like to flip this to you now that you've had a couple days here to like ruminate it on the hire. Jeff, let's hear your thoughts first on where you're at after said crash out.
So I 1,000% crashed out. I'll admit that. I said, who is this man? He is 5'7" and is bald, and I'm freaking out. But what I did was, it's a healthy exercise I suggest is for Lions fans. I wrote down a bunch of things that were positive, and I wrote down things that I didn't like. So I tried to at least be a little more responsible, balanced, a little more mature, a little more
girl made a pros and cons list.
Yeah, pros and cons list. You know, I try not to overreact. It's like, I'm trying to be a little more mature in this process. I am now that it's Wednesday, a couple days removed, I'm not in love with it, but I understand why. I understand the fit. I think when you first read the name and you look at his resume, there's not really much of an impressive resume when it comes to like statistically, but you understand the fact that he was with Kyler Murray for a little bit. He didn't really have Kyler Murray for a ton. Didn't have a lot of guys at all, really at all on offense this year for the Cardinals. So there are some things that you can definitely argue for Drew Petsing, but when I first read the news, I'm like, dang. Most of that, I will admit, came from the Mike McDaniel thing. Okay, I will admit that. He was like clearly my number one guy. And then you read that the Lions did not see him as quite the fit, which that didn't help the crash out, but that's a whole nother conversation. But the Drew Petsing thing, I think at this point, I understand the fit. He uses a lot, and you've tweeted this out, Colton, the 13 personnel thing. He's heavy play action, values under center football. You know, they run the ball. That's one of the things he loves to do. Speaking to someone over in Arizona with the media, he spoke a lot about that. They love running the ball over there. So I understand it now that I'm a couple days removed. Doesn't mean I'm in love with it, but I understand why the Lions would bring a guy in like Drew Petsing. And I like the fact that he is young. He's a young, innovative, creative guy. It's not like John Morton, all due respect, where he's, you know, 50-something years old. He's been in the NFL for like 30 years and only been an OC once. You know, Drew Petsing is younger. A lot of coaches speak highly of him, so – I'm willing to give him a chance, fellas. That's where I'm at now. Again, not in love with it, but I understand the fit. That's where I'm at.
I can't speak for the group. Petsing was off of my radar, and I think I always look at where can I learn, where can I be better, you know, in future situations like this. And really, I didn't look much beyond, you know, kind of what they had done recently. And that was a mistake. You know, last year, what did you expect from a Cardinals team that was missing their quarterback, was missing their running back, was missing running back two, missed running back three for part of the year, finished the year with four of their five starting offensive linemen on IR for a good chunk, that was missing their number one receiver for a long time, was missing their number two tight end blocking. I mean, like, that offense was junk last year, and the defense was garbage. I mean, you look at their week-by-week scoreboard, how often they're giving up 40 points. Like, that changes how you play offense. It changes how you're defended. And so I didn't think to go back and look multiple years at some of these resumes, and Petsing's is pretty impressive, you know, particularly from a run game standpoint. number two in the NFL at yards per carry in 23 and 24. The year that he had his quarterback and had his running back for all 17 games, it was a borderline top 10 offense, still without anywhere near the firepower really that the Lions had. And I've really started today digging into the film and have grown kind of appreciation for what this running game looked like, the creativity of it, the different looks that they had. I thought it was more zone-based. It's not. It's more gap-based. Made James Conner the best that he was in his career. And I can see why, you know, what he was doing was resonating with Dan Campbell.
Yeah, if we're talking initial reactions, I'm with Justin. He was not really on my radar. I think that was probably because he came from, you know, Cardinals team that was 3-14 and, you know, got fired. So I wasn't really, you know, looking at that staff for maybe potential names. But I think as soon as you start to dig into his background and the things that he likes to do, things that he wants to do, things that he's done in his past, you see the fit. And I think that's all you can ask for right now, until games are played and these guys line up and, you know, take the field. But in terms of the things that he likes to do stylistically, you look at the under center stuff, you might be, you know, you might see like the 70% rate that they ran in Arizona and say, well, that's way too much. The Lions are hovering around 50, 52% in under center rate versus shotgun rate, 70% what they were doing in Arizona. If you look at what Kyler was doing under Cliff Kingsbury and really Kyler's background in general as a quarterback, I think they're at like 89, almost 90% shotgun rate under Cliff Kingsbury. And that came down to about 71.5% when they took over in Arizona. So, you know, I think what they tried to do is incorporate more of that under center heavy personnel looks in Arizona for a quarterback like Kyler Murray that wasn't used to doing it. And, you know, in some ways it was working for them. That 2024 season, they did some really good things. They put a lot of good stuff on tape. I remember when the Cardinals played the Lions, Dan Campbell brought up just the things that they were doing and the ways that they're using Kyler. He said, I really like what they're doing with him. I think so much of his game when he was coming out of college was, hey, he's in the gun, put him in the gun. That's what he's done. And you're playing the spread game, which there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, this unit comes in and the approach is a little bit different. He said they're taking a portion of that, but they're a little bit heavier in the run game with it. 12 personnel, 13 personnel. And the fact that they've incorporated under center with it and the heavy runs with boots off of it, hard action, get him out of the pocket completely, let him see the field. If it's not there, then you can see what he does with his feet. He really liked what they were doing with Kyler Murray specifically in 2024. And maybe it just wasn't a good fit. You know, Kyler has his limitations as a quarterback. And I think what you see with Petsing and his background from Cleveland with Kevin Stefanski and Minnesota with Stefanski and even North Turner when he was there, a lot of under center play action, that's the stuff that the Lions like to do. So, you know, you can look at whatever you want, the numbers from 2025 with the injuries, if you want to evaluate him off that, sure. But I think you have to look at the total picture with a guy like this. And if you're trying to figure out why he was brought in here, that's probably where you start.
Yeah, I feel like if we just remove the name and maybe the lack of cachet from the equation, isn't Petsing basically what the fan base was hoping for in this OC hire? Like, he checks, I feel like, all of the boxes that the fan base had come up with. And, you know, a guy with 3 years of play calling experience, a guy without direct ties to Dan Campbell and not even within that Sean Payton coaching tree, you know, a young mind at 38 with fresh ideas. And if you look at the way, as you guys have referenced, the way he coordinated that Cardinals team, someone that can reconnect the Lions to their identity as a team that can rush the ball physically, but also creatively. You know, the way they played football when Ben Johnson was here and when their offensive line was elite is in a lot of ways the way that the Cardinals played football in 2023 and 2024 when they had a healthy offensive line and healthy running backs. And I think to me, the first thing that stood out about Petsing as I started looking at his background was just the diverse offensive resume. I think it's something that I mentioned on our pod last week that the Lions would probably value in someone that has coached multiple positions on offense that isn't just a passing game specialist. In a lot of ways, the ladder that Petsing climbed mirrors the one almost rung for rung that Ben Johnson climbed. Like they spent time in receivers rooms, in quarterbacks rooms, in tight ends rooms, all in the NFL, all with multiple teams. And unlike Morton, who was a self-admitted specialist in the pass game, I think Petsing presents a more complete offensive profile as a coach. And I would think that for Dan Campbell, that was something that definitely was appealing.
I want to go back to some of the shotgun stuff too. And I know Colton was kind of hitting on it, but like that's your personnel you're playing to. And a lot of it actually was pistol, you know, and I think that's kind of the compromise you see with some of these mobile quarterbacks where you want to play more of an under center style, but you know, height limitations or mobility kind of impact they're used to. I think we'll see a pretty big shift to more under center play. Also a ton of third down, 2 minute drill, trailing, like all of that went to full on shotgun for him. So I think, like I said, the defense was really bad and kind of put them in a lot more of those situations where they kind of had to utilize their personnel for it. And so I don't think that that's going to carry over at all.
Yeah, I think, people, to Will's point, you know, when they first saw the name, that's where the freak out happened, at least for myself. I mean, I'm a fan. You guys do great work. I'm not you guys. Okay. I'm going to crash out. I'm going to act like an idiot. And then I take a couple days and then I'm going to be like, okay, that's fair. He has play calling experience. He's young and all these things that come into play. I think where people are worried, or I guess what they're thinking of, fans that are concerned, is, you know, they're thinking of Dan Campbell of, okay, you know, because I'm in Ross St. Brown just said on his podcast today, actually, where he was like, you know, fans, you guys don't trust Dan Campbell. And I think, you know, people are kind of looking at this season as, okay, you just fired John Morton. And by the way, can I just say this before I continue? I'm not even really worried about the offense. I'm more worried about the defense, if I'm being quite frank. Like the offense, I think, is going to be really good either way. But anyway, people are looking at this offense coordinator as, hey, man, you know, if you fire Drew Petsing for whatever reason, or you take away the play calling duties, you're looking at probably, and I know Anthony Lynn, whether you want to count them, that's technically you're kind of one for, you know, four total guys that you've brought in. And they're looking at Dan Campbell and how much pressure he's kind of under to kind of get this hire right. And I think also that what goes into that is keeping Calvin Shepard, because he's deciding to keep him. So, you know, you kind of need Calvin to take that next step. But in your guys' eyes, how much pressure is Dan Campbell under? I know Brad Holmes obviously has his own thing that people are looking at him for, but for Dan Campbell this year to kind of get not only the offensive coordinator right, but to Calvin Shepard, for Calvin Shepard to prove him right for keeping him there just with his staff.
I think you're constantly under pressure, an NFL coach, like, right. It's always kind of a boiler room, but in terms of job security, I mean, it's still four plus 500 seasons. It's still a lot of unprecedented success. And I know that the bar has been elevated, but like, also it's like you've forgotten where you came from, you know, and it's still kind of new. It's still kind of novel. They're still kind of navigating this new era of success, and success always isn't linear. And just because you took this first step back doesn't mean we suddenly should be talking about coach and GM jobs. Now, if, you know, they take a lateral step or another step back next year, sure, the seat starts getting warm. But again, I still don't think you're talking about jobs at the end of next season.
Yeah, I look at where the Lions are at right now, and they had a down year, but they went 9-8. And a lot of people are going to point to, oh, you finished fourth place, but four straight years with a winning record, I don't think that's anything to just kind of write off. I think Dan's done a really good job here. And yeah, he got the hire wrong. I think he'd be the first one to admit that. He moved on quickly after the season ended. He didn't kind of drag it along. He didn't even keep Morton on staff. He realized he made a mistake. He realized that midseason he made a mistake. That's why he took over play calling. So I think Dan's one to kind of realize when things are going wrong very quickly. Now, if there's going to be pressure, I do agree with Jeff in a way. I think it's probably going to be more on the defensive side, because even with Morton, and I need to make this clear, the Lions are still top five in yards per game and scoring. And I think maybe one of our commenters put this out there too. But like, to be, if that's your floor as an offense, and we're talking about bringing a young guy with new ideas that does what you like to do, assuming they fix the offensive line, because that was obviously an issue as well. you know, when we're talking about this conversation. But if you get back to some of the things that you're doing in years past and you fix it, I'm not worried about this offense. Like, the offense is going to be just fine. Now, if the defense has another down year, and this is year six of running the same system or a variation of the system, then it might be time to say, okay, we gotta change some things here, whether it's personnel wise or a coaching change. It doesn't sound like that's happening this year, but maybe in the future if it's still looking pretty rough. So, and you know, injuries are obviously a factor there too. But in terms of Dan's role, I like, with this hire, is there much at stake? Sure, because they're in a Super Bowl window and they have all the talent in the world, and like, the expectations should be high for this offense. And Dan, again, would be the first to say that. But I don't see him being on the hot seat, even with another relatively down year again next year.
Yeah, the only thing I would say maybe in counter to that is, like, their offensive floor to me this year was drastically lowered. And I think that's reflected in the fact that, you guys know this, they scored fewer than 20 points five times this year. And they had only done that four times combined the prior 2 years. I think the offensive ceiling is as high as ever for this team. But in order to restore the floor, they have to get back to running the ball, controlling the clock, and exerting pressure on the defense. And in order to do that, I don't care who you hire as OC, you have to go fix this offensive line. I think the simplest way to review this hire, especially with all the emphasis that Petsing clearly places on the run game, is that it will look great if Brad Holmes and the Lions do as they say they will and urgently upgrade the offensive line this offseason. And it might look terrible if they don't. And in that way, I think Brad Holmes will dictate the success of this hire as much as Dan Campbell himself and Drew Petsing himself. But, you know, I do think there's a decent amount at stake here for Campbell. Like, you've already whiffed twice on your two external OC hires. And granted, one of them, Anthony Lynn, stepped into a much different roster than the one that John Morton and Petsing now are taking over. But, you know, can you really afford to strike out, to go 0-for-3 in that situation? So if this blows up dramatically, and I don't think it will, it's not impossible to think that Dan Campbell would end up on the hot seat just because of all of the other pieces that are already in place on offense. But to go back to what Petsing does so well, I think a stat that we all know well now, and I reference this in what I wrote about Petsing yesterday, is that the Lions were held under 100 rushing yards seven times this season and lost all seven games. And they had been held under 100 rushing yards just four times in the prior two seasons combined. And just out of curiosity, I wanted to see how the Cardinals stacked up to that data point when they were at their best. And only the Ravens from 2023 to 2024 were held under 100 rushing yards in fewer games than the Lions. And then the next most stable rushing attacks after that, over that two-year stretch, were the 49ers, who were held under 106 games, the Eagles at seven games, and the Bills and Cardinals at eight games. Like, you could make a pretty strong case that for 2 years, Drew Petsing was coordinating one of the most reliable rushing attacks in the NFL. And over that two-year stretch, they averaged more yards per carry, 5.2, I think, than every team but Baltimore. Obviously, things fell through this year when they were down to replacements at running back, when they only had their starting O-line for four games out of 17. But you can definitely see the vision here and what intrigues Dan about Petsing and the way he designs a run game.
And I would add to that, like, the personnel, right? Like, what did you think of James Conner before Drew Petsing got there, right? Like, this is a guy that had peak seasons of, well, he had a 970-yard season early in his career, but 750, 750, 720, 780, kind of leading into that, kind of a very pedestrian average number one back. You know, what of their offensive line is household names? Obviously, they spent a first-round pick on Paris Johnson a couple years back, but it's not a star-studded, Pro Bowl-filled offensive line, yet their run game success was consistently top 10 in success rate. The yards per carry were obviously good. Connor took his game to another level. And so even without great pieces, schematically, they found ways to have success. And I think that's where I find encouragement.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the stuff that they did in the run game was, I thought, kind of what the Lions want to get back to. It seems like Dan has kind of been hinting at going back to some of the things they did earlier, whether it's training camp practices or, you know, he kind of hinted at that at the end of the year presser. So I don't know if that's part of it. I had to dive into the numbers a little bit more. But in terms of, you know, fixing the run game or what the Lions need as an OC, like, I really don't feel like they need a lot. And, like, everyone wanted McDaniel, and I totally get it. I get why you'd want him. He's one of the best schemers in the NFL, one of the best offensive minds. I totally understand it. I think, one, I don't know if he wanted to come here. Maybe having Dan as, you know, the influence that he has on this offense maybe wasn't super appealing for an offensive coordinator like that, who really tailors his offenses to what he has, and maybe he wants to tinker without any meddling. So maybe that's part of it. The other thing I would say is, you know, Dan probably wants to run this a certain way and probably doesn't think that it needs a scheme overhaul based on what they've shown in the past. Like, the biggest thing that we've all said since the season ended, you got to fix the offensive line. You need a new offensive coordinator, but you got to fix the offensive line first and foremost. So even when Dan took over, we liked some of the things that he did, like getting the ball to J-Mo more, the play action rate jumped 18th to 6th when Dan took over. Like, the core of what the offense is supposed to look like, you saw it more under Dan. But the biggest problem that entire stretch was the offensive line. And he had even more injuries to the offensive line than Morton had to deal with. And I think that kind of hindered some things. I think Dan could still be a good long-term play caller if he wanted to be. But he's bringing in the guy that can present new ideas. It's fresh blood. It's an outside hire. It's not one of his buddies. It's like Bertie mentioned, it's not someone from the Sean Payton tree. He's bringing in a guy that has a history running under center, play action, downhill run scheme. And he thinks that that's what this offense needs based on this hire. And if he truly had a chance to bring McDaniel in and McDaniel was like, that's my number one choice, I'll come if you want me, and he said no, then I think that's a conversation about whether that was the right thing or not. But just based on the person he went with and Petsing, I think it makes a lot of sense on the surface. And, you know, again, he's got to go out and do it. But with what he's going to bring to the table with some of his ideas and his history, and assuming Brad Holmes goes out and fixes the offensive line, I really don't think they're far off from becoming another elite offense like they were in 2024.
Yeah, I'm with you, Colton. Go ahead, Jared.
All right. Just really quickly.
No, I was going to say, I'm with you on 2022, obviously being an important reference point for Campbell. I mean, he brought it up twice in the final week of the season and how sorry, you skipped there for a minute, did you? Did I cut you off?
Keep cooking. You're good. I'll come back.
Okay. No, I just – Campbell referenced 2022 and wanting to get back to the way they played football at the end of that season twice at the end of this season. Like, clearly he feels like they have morphed into a different team over the past couple of years. This year, obviously, in particular. And you know, he was like, yes, we have more talent, but are we the same team we were in 2022 at the end of that year? You got to start asking yourself that question. And if not, why? What is it about that? And I go back to the way he talked about the Cardinals offense before the Lions played the Cardinals last year. I know you referenced some of his quotes, Colton. He also raved about like the multiplicity of their run game and how they could get you in so many ways, but how at the core of it, it was, and these are his words, an in-your-face downhill scheme, and it was big boy ball. And I don't think that Dan Campbell would tell you, in all honesty, that the Lions could claim to play football that way this year. And I think it really grinded on him by the end of the year. And again, first and foremost, you have to restore the offensive line to fix this, but you also need a coordinator who is committed to instilling that sort of football into his offense. And I feel like Petsing is and or can be that guy. The other quote that stood out to me from last year before that game, and I get it, coaches always talk up the opponent in the lead up to the game, but these felt like sincere comments, was Aaron Glenn, when asked about the Cardinals offense, went right to Petsing and was like, this guy does a really, really good job of, in passing situations, continuing to run the ball and forcing defenses to play true. That was another signature of Ben Johnson over 2023 and 2024. And Glenn went on to say, like, this is not an offense where you can just say, all right, we're putting in our pass defense in an obvious passing down, because they'll gut you by running the ball in those situations because they feel that good about their run game. And You know, I think those are hallmarks of what the Lions did so well for 2 years, 2.5 years, really going back to the midway point of 2022. And from 2022, November 1st, 2022 to the end of 2024, the Lions were tied with the Chiefs for the best record in the NFL because, in my opinion, they owned the trenches on both sides of the ball. And that's the team that Campbell wants to reprise. That's the football that he wants to get back to. And I think it's the biggest reason why Petsing is here. Now, defensively, that's a whole different question.
I think it's funny that, like, people think we didn't want McDaniel. Like, as a media member, there's nothing I wanted more in my entire life.
A dream.
Like, easiest job ever when you just have quote machines that give you interesting information all the time. Like, from a media member standpoint, I definitely wanted to cover McDaniel. But I think a couple things here. I listed off the laundry list of injuries the Cardinals dealt with, and you want to say that's an excuse, whatever. Are you going to give McDaniel the same excuse? Because which offense scored more points the last two seasons, Arizona or Miami? And who had way more offensive talent? Miami.
Yep.
McDaniel's offense was not good the last 2 years. Did I want him to come here because I knew there was a track record a couple years ago and he's worked with similar weapons and he's interesting as hell? Absolutely. The other factor is that Dan Campbell mentioned when asked if he wanted to still call plays, maybe I do, because then I don't have to worry about losing my play caller and having to go through this again. Mike McDaniel is still in consideration for some of these head coaching jobs. If he doesn't get one, the reports are he's going to the Chargers. But the odds that the Lions would have been able to hold on to him beyond this season if they had any level of success, if he was able to rebuild his credentials after two down years in Miami, was low. And then you're going through this process again. And I get the idea of going all in for a Super Bowl, but it's like, that's like trading a first round pick for a rental at the trade deadline, right? Like, you've given away something that is of great value long-term. And with Petsing, I'm not saying Petsing can't be a head coach. It's like, he has gotten some cursory looks here last year, but the odds of him becoming a head coach next year are, I would say, significantly lower, even with the same level of success. If you plug them in a vacuum, same level of success in Detroit, McDaniel's more likely to get a head coaching job. And then we're going back to the cycle again. You're entering scratch off lottery ticket again. So at least at this level, you're kind of entering an area of stability. And that was what was so key through the rise from 21 through 24 was this coaching staff stability that they have, where they were able to build chemistry, grow together as a staff, as an organization. And I think that's another thing that Dan's really looking for, just kind of based on those comments.
And I do think, I want to point this out, I think there's a difference between Morton and Petsing in the sense that when Morton took over, he had one stint as an OC, but he coached for, 30, 25 years maybe, and, like, didn't get a lot of those looks. And so you could probably in hindsight point back and say, well, why is that? Why aren't teams trying to hire this guy that's so valuable to be an OC? And maybe that was a red flag that a lot of us missed. But the difference, I think, between Morton and Petsing is Petsing did have some of that buzz. And I agree with you, Justin. Maybe the shine is worn off a little bit, so to speak. But he did have some of that buzz, and I think you could actually keep him because of that 2025 season, because some of these guys aren't really looking in that direction of the Arizona Cardinals after the year they had. But my colleague at The Athletic, Jordan Rodriguez, she put together, I think with Mike Jones, a list of, 50 under 40 in February 2025, and Petsing was on it. And so coming off that 2024 season, he was viewed as a guy that could be a head coach one day. He did interview for that Bears job, and I think some of that might be because he has a relationship with Poles out there. But here's what Jordan wrote last year. She said, Petsing is viewed as a future head coach thanks to a steady climb from Cleveland Browns coaching intern in 2013 before holding various offensive assistant positions with the Minnesota Vikings during a six-year span. The former Middlebury College defensive back returned to Cleveland, where he was tight ends coach and then quarterbacks coach. Success under Kevin Stefanski with the Browns led Petsing to Arizona, where he's been offensive coordinator for the last two seasons. Players and colleagues praise Petsing for his vision, his knack of finding ways to maximize his player strengths, and his strong communication skills. Justin, you made the point before that you sort of think Jared is a quarterback that kind of needs to be intellectually stimulated with a coach. Everything you read about Petzing is different from what you've read about Morton. Morton, all the comments were, oh, he's a grinder. You know, he's going to watch film till 3 a.m. He does this, he does that. Nobody was really saying some of the things that they're saying about Petzing. Colt McCoy was asked about Petzing in 2023, and he says, you know, he's tasked with a big job coming and teaching all of us a new system. He's always had an answer. He's always had a vision of what he wants it to look like, and there's open lines of communication. As you're learning a new system, that's all you can really ask for. There's a former Vikings receiver, I believe, Jarius Wright. He said he's very intelligent, very, very intelligent. If you give him a school book, he would make all A's. You would think that wouldn't translate much to football, but if you give him any test to know any play, any position on offense, he would know it, every single thing about it. And that was as an assistant. We knew at some point he was going to make it and be an OC. So that's the stuff I think Jared needs. That's probably what the offense needs, a guy that can answer all the questions, have the answers for the tests readily available. And that's the thing that they were kind of missing with Morton. The biggest thing with Morton you can point to is his experience with Dan. He was here in 2022. He was familiar with the system. That's all fine and dandy. That's valuable to have on staff. But if you don't know how to translate that to play calling, that's going to be an issue. So I think that's where Petzing can kind of make a difference and kind of be different from Morton. So I think a lot of people are comparing the two, but Petzing's 38 years old. He is not Morton. He's been in coaching for a decade plus, but he hasn't really like been a career assistant, so to speak. Like, he's gotten this look. He was hired right again immediately after that staff was fired to get another OC. I think that speaks to what he brings to the table, and he's going to get another shot with more talent at his disposal this time around.
Well, before
shout out Middlebury. Shout out Middlebury, by the way. As someone who used to attend their summer hockey camps up in Vermont, big fan of Middlebury College. I was going to make the same point, Colton, so I'm glad you did. Just look at his educational background talking about Petzing. Like, this is a well-schooled, well-educated individual who even spent some time coaching at both Harvard and Yale. But to me, the coaching stint that is most intriguing is the one he spent in Minnesota, just given all the different influences he was around there. You know, he was hired on that staff by, I believe, then offensive coordinator for the Vikings, Norv Turner, who is sort of this longtime proponent of like the power run game and the vertical play action passing attack, which are the two staples of this Dan Campbell offense, I think we would all agree. And then obviously spent a lot of time there with Kevin Stefanski, who eventually brought Petzing with him to the Browns when Stefanski took over in Cleveland, but maybe most notably spent 3 years there with Hank Fraley. And I think a lot of people have fairly justifiably pointed out that during those two seasons when the Cardinals had that elite rushing attack, they also had Clayton Adams in the building, who was their offensive line coach and surely had a hand by all accounts in the design and execution of their rushing game. And that when Adams then left to become OC in Dallas, the rushing attack in Arizona obviously crumbled, and the one in Dallas rose into one of the best in the NFL. Now, we've already discussed the injuries, but it matters to me anyways, as I review this hire, and I'm sure it mattered to the Lions, that Petzing spent 3 years working in concert with the Lions' now run game coordinator and offensive line coach, Hank Fraley, back in Minnesota. And I know that was like 10 years ago now, but it should be reassuring to those who attribute the success solely to Clayton Adams, which would be unfair, that Petzing will be stepping into a situation here with an offensive line and run game coordinator that he's worked with in the past.
Colton, every single time he started a sentence with, let me tell you about the most important stint, I was waiting for the Boston College drop, and he didn't do it. That is crazy. Crazy work by Will.
He obviously needs to credit all of his career success to the 2 years he spent at BC. 1 year, 2 years?
I don't know. Ben Johnson there with him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Besties. I love how friends with Ben Johnson's the new friends with Sean McVay. I love that.
It's just a line on the resume.
Yeah. I think the Cardinals did that when they hired Cliff Kingsbury. They're like, oh, and he's friends with Sean McVay. So like the hire.
A lot of discipline there from Will. Surprised he didn't throw in that either. Ryan Poles, I believe, Boston College, if I'm not mistaken. I think Ryan Poles has some ties over there too. We'll get more into the Drew Petzing.
Yeah, we'll claim him now.
Yeah. We'll get more into the Drew Petzing hire. We'll talk about David Montgomery. But first, I got to tell you about our friends over at Sleeper. We'll catch you guys in 30 seconds.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
Let me tell you about our friends over at Sleeper, a proud sponsor of Lions Collective, which you should be using the code HMA. Get a $100 deposit matched up to $100. And NFL playoffs continue this weekend. You guys should be using NFL. The Sleeper picks for the NFL. Very simple. Choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players. You can do it live. You can do a pregame. Cross different sports as well, not just the NFL. You just pick more or less than their predicted stats. I had my picks out there for Rams, Seahawks. You can go tail them, or you can pick your own. And on Sleeper, you can get up to 1,000x payout. Share with your friends and get rewarded together. Appreciate Sleeper, as always, for sponsoring Lions Collective. Now, we got more to get to. I love this stat, too. I think you put this out there, Cold, if I'm not mistaken. The guy's just a stat machine. I think you spit out there on Twitter, 6 lowest 3 and outright. Is that you? I think you put that out.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Which I honestly, I that was insane. I mean, 6 lowest 3 and outright from 2023 to 2025. Given the talent he had at his disposal, the only teams above him, Lions, Bills, Cowboys, Rams, 49ers. I think we can all safely say all pretty good offensive. Those are all pretty good offensive systems, offensive coaches, offensive teams. So another thing to add in there. What do you guys? I'd like to ask you guys this, because this is one of the biggest things I saw trending with the Drew Petzing thing is, which I think is stupid. Even for me, who was, you know, I was crashing out. I thought this was ridiculous as well. Like the goodbye Amon-Ra and J-Mo production, like the people in, I mean this respectfully, okay, that there's crash out, you know, and then there's just being a complete idiot. I think that's the part where I would, and I'll say, you guys don't have to speak, being a complete idiot. What's the narrative there of the 13 personnel thing? I think the big thing for me, and this I think is a fair question, is where does kind of Isaac Tesla fit into all of this? I think it's less about utilizing wide receivers. I watched an interview with Kurt Warner. He joined a Cardinals podcast, and they asked him about the offense because they asked him about the lack of development with the Cardinals at wide receiver, you know, like, oh, they don't use our wide receivers. And they were asking Kurt Warner, and Kurt Warner's like, dude, you don't think the first progression on most of the play calls, or at least things that are drawn up by the OC, are wide receivers? I mean, it's not like the guy's he's not like not trying to target wide receivers. That's more on the quarterback. So I would point that to Kyler Murray over in Arizona. It's not like Drew Petzing saying, yeah, we're not going to get involved Marvin Harrison Jr. But what say you guys on that topic of the 13 personnel thing, kind of the future? How does Isaac Tesla fit into all this, and just how he loves more tight ends on the field?
Let's not get carried away with the 13 personnel stuff, right? Like, you're talking about 6-8 snaps a game, right? Like, it's probably not too different from what the Lions were already doing with some of the jumbo packages with Dan Skipper. Maybe you see it a little bit more in terms of 12 personnel. I'm going to go back to 2024 just because there was more of a consistency with the health of the roster with Laporta and Brock Wright, but Brock Wright played almost 600 snaps. The Lions are already a heavy 12 personnel team. Tim Patrick played close to 650. I think that's kind of the vision. I think you're going to see, they're still going to be in 11 personnel 65, 70% of the time. And so let's not get carried away with this heavy tight end usage. In terms of receivers, look, I just don't think Marvin Harrison's that good. And my first inkling of that came from a Lions defender who kind of critiqued the stiffness of his breaks and his route running and how like they weren't particularly intimidated by that when playing him. Watching some of that film that I was watching today, it's not particularly good. Two, Kyler Murray does not take many chances downfield. Very, very conservative with just some of the shots that he had. I know Goff gets some of that reputation as well, but there were throws I was watching these games like Goff's pressing that dig or that out route or that corner route way more than Murray does. And then you want to talk about receivers disappearing. How many of you heard of Michael Wilson before this year? How many people? I mean, I remember catching the name during the draft and briefly looking at dude had 1,000 yards. Michael Wilson. You think he holds up to Amon-Ra St. Brown or Jameson Williams when you're game planning? Get out of here. Get out of here. It's such a stupid argument. Great. Marvin Harrison isn't developing to be the guy that they drafted him to be. Turns out maybe he's just not that good.
Yeah, I really don't think Petsing would be hired here if he only wanted to throw the ball exclusively to Sam Laporta, like he did Sam McBride. Like, you know, that's not really a fit here. I mean, like, obviously, I think Laporta is probably one of the biggest beneficiaries, obviously, with a move like this, with a guy that incorporates tight ends to the run game and pass game and was a former tight ends coach himself. But when you look at the personnel and the weapons that they had at the skill positions in Arizona versus what's here, you play your strengths. And I think that he's a guy that's adapted. Like, he's coached receivers and tight ends, so I think he'll be able to get both guys involved. And the thing that people need to remember, and I've seen so many Cardinals fans make this point, like, oh, good luck, your offense didn't go downhill. People said the offense sucked with John Morton. They were still, again, top five. I think they're second in scoring, and Morton was calling plays. So it's like, if that again, if that's the baseline, the general area where you're going to wind up, no matter who's calling plays, then it's pretty solid. Obviously, you think that it can be better, and you want it to be better, and you make this move because you think it can. But if that's the floor, it's going to be fine. And Petsing is not going to have the full reign, I don't think, that here that he had in Arizona, because Dan's here. And I think maybe for a young coach, that's a good thing for Petsing, because he was paired with the defensive coach in Gannon. And Gannon was with him in Minnesota, so they had that relationship. And when you get offered a job like that, you take it, right? Like, you get that opportunity, you get that promotion, you have to take it. I understand that. But I almost think in some ways he was set up to fail, whether it's the quarterback that he was paired with, not having like that senior mentor to help him, you know, in his first time calling plays. He didn't really have that. And I thought he did a good job without it. So now you pair him with a coach like Dan that knows what this offense is supposed to look like. You give him weapons like Amon-Ra St. Brown, like Jameson Williams. People talk about the downfield passing game. Kyler had a lot to do with that. But also, they don't have a Jameson Williams in that offense. So you're going to take those shots when they're available, when J-Mo's open and he's streaking down the field. So, like, everything is set up in place for that to be different than it was in Arizona. And it's not like it's going to look exactly the same because there's different personnel at your disposal. So I feel like that's getting lost on so many people. Like, oh, it's going to, you know, Sam Laporta is going to have 150 catches, but only like 800 yards. That's what this offense is going to look like. No, no, guys, you have receivers here. I think there's one gripe. Maybe it's Isaac Tesla. Like, is he? Are you going to use your number three receiver when he's probably a fourth or fifth option? I don't know what his role is going to look like going forward, but like, that's a problem I guess you figure out later. But that has nothing really to do with Petsing. He's coming in here to kind of get the offense and back on track and present new ideas and fix the run game and things like that. I would imagine Tesla is still going to have a role. Otherwise, they wouldn't have drafted him. The Lions are smart enough to figure out ways to use him. So, collectively, between it, Hank Fraley, Dan Campbell, and Petsing, and all these other smart coaches on staff, I feel like they'll be able to find a way to make this offense work and keep everyone happy.
You know who they were using?
The Lions also.
Really quickly, well, you know who they're using on some of these Davis and Williams-esque plays, these end-arounds, these wide receiver screens? Greg Dortch.
Yeah.
I mean, Greg Dortch.
Very like, fine receiver. Very fine. No, I'm just kidding.
Fine, like an average athlete, average production. Like, come on, guys. Like, let's stop comparing the Cardinals offense to the Lions offense. Like, the pieces are not the same, other than tight end, where their tight end is better than yours.
Hey, Greg,
the other thing, the
same height too, is Drew Petsing. Okay, that's my last
job. I had to sneak that one in there.
You can go on.
Now, the other thing that I feel like merits mentioning in the wide receiver conversation as it relates to Tesla is the Lions have been remarkably healthy at wide receiver. And in the event that one of their big guys misses time next year, maybe that problem, or the dilemma is a better word for it, solves itself. You know, I don't want to entirely redeem the Cardinals' offensive season because they finished where they did. But one thing jumped out at me today when I was going through some of their numbers from this year and some of the games they played. Seattle, who had the best run defense in the NFL this year, maybe the best defense period, allowed 5+ yards per carry in just 3 games this year. 2 of those came in the 2 games they played against Arizona. And in both of those games, the Cardinals were already down to their 3rd and 4th string running backs and were missing their starting offensive lines. And I know one of those games was like 35-0 by halftime. I didn't dig into the numbers deep enough to say whether most or some of those yards came during garbage time. But that, to me, speaks to a coordinator who still can scheme up some ways to run the ball when his offense is diminished, even against a really elite defense. The other thing that kind of strikes me here is that the Lions, because they weren't able to run the ball with their normal level of efficiency this year, saw the play action game dry up a little bit. Like that, they went into play action more than any team in the NFL last season when they were hanging 40 and 50, it felt like almost every single week. Goff led the league in percentage of play action dropbacks. He led the league in percentage of play action passes. And he was closer to, I think, 10th this year in percentage of play action dropbacks, and was around the same rank in play action passes. And that was just because they weren't able to establish the run. And I think with the way this run game should be designed behind a better upgraded offensive line, you can dip back into those play action shots downfield. And now all of a sudden J-Mo is even more dangerous than he already is. And so is the passing attack as a whole.
I wanted to, before we kind of close, we got about 14 minutes left. We could talk the Demo stuff, because Demo, you know, how the season kind of went for him. You know, he was underutilized objectively, and now you have a guy who values the run game and I think would love to have somebody like David Montgomery on the roster. In your opinion, how does this hire kind of impact David Montgomery's future, if at all?
Man, watching some of those Connor runs today and just the way he moves, the way he makes defenders miss in tight quarters, the way he sees it but doesn't have maybe elite athleticism, and he makes up for it with all the other stuff. It was like watching David Montgomery at his best and thinking, yeah, this works. Like if the Lions can present David Montgomery a plan where they can fix the way they messed up the rotation last year, I would absolutely love to kind of see this run back, because I think Petzing's offense, his blocking schemes, his run designs fit really, really well with what Dave Montgomery does. Anything fits Gibbs, right? Like the guy can run inside, can run outside, has speed, his receiving ability, but like Montgomery could flourish again if that bridge can be repaired.
Yeah, I don't know what those end of the year exit interviews look like, but I would imagine there's probably some smoothing out to be done with Montgomery. But just because he wasn't happy with his role, I think that's pretty clear to anyone that was paying attention, whether it's the cryptic social media, Instagram posts, or whatever. Like, it didn't seem like he was very happy with that role. And it was diminished. And they obviously drafted Jahmyr Gibbs 12th overall for reasons, because they think that he can be a star and the bell cow running back. But I don't think that means you have to eliminate David Montgomery from this offense. And if he does like request a trade, then that's a different conversation. To my knowledge, he hasn't yet. If that comes, then I guess you deal with it. But if you can smooth this over, like, you want David Montgomery on your team. Like, he makes this offense better, in my opinion. I think he had close to a career high in yards per carry this year, if not a career high. Like, he still does so much in the downhill run game. And if that's what they're trying to get back to, and I bring this up because Al Karsten, football guy Al on Twitter, good friend of the pod.
Yeah, love football guy Al.
He came to Dog and Pony to watch our live show.
Oh, hell yeah.
He's a big supporter of the show. He tweeted this out not too long ago. 2024 Arizona Cardinals run type rate, excluding scrambles and sneaks. I think they were first in power rate at 22.6%. They're second in the NFL in 2024 in duo and man at 27.2%. So I think those types of runs obviously benefit a guy like David Montgomery. So if you want to keep him and say, hey, man, we're sorry for how that went. Like, we don't want to, like, please, baby, bring me back. It's like a boyfriend kind of pleading to keep his girlfriend after cheating on him. But, you know, I think if you tell him you're going to smooth things over and you show him what Petzing does and what his offense is going to look like, he might say, OK, I like this vision that you have for me. Like, let's keep this rolling. I think that's probably the best way to approach it. And that's probably what I would say to Demo if you're trying to keep him around. If you want to trade him, then that's a different discussion. But I think this offense could really benefit him.
Yeah, before,
I mean, it's...
No, go ahead, Will. Go ahead.
No, you got it, Jeff.
No, go. I thought you guys were done.
Okay. I was going to say, this is a David Montgomery question more than a Lions question. I think, you know, you read the tea leaves here, and pretty clearly the Lions would like to keep Montgomery while also re-expanding his role, but Montgomery isn't coming back to play that role, and he would prefer a change of scenery if that's going to continue. So you need to ensure him that they can re-implement him into this offense the way he was being used in 2024. You know, he doesn't need the carries he was getting in 2023, like 15 a game, but if he can be around 11 or 12 a game, and you know, it's 13 to 14 touches a game, I think that's something that he would be amenable to. I don't want to speak for him, but that's the role he lost this year, and that's why, you know, it feels like he's seeking a change of scenery. I'll say this, now that Petsing is in place, I felt even before this hire that the biggest question the Lions had to answer this offseason was who's playing center in 2026. And I feel more strongly about that now than ever, just because this run scheme and this overall offensive design is going to put so much on the center's plate before the snap and on the center's shoulders after the snap. And you need to have someone that can lessen the burden on Jared before the snap and can get to those second level blocks after it. And I don't know who that guy is. I would call Arizona and ask about their center, Yelda Froholt. I know he's under contract through next season, but with a new head coach there and maybe a new offensive scheme, if they're looking to compile some draft picks, that's a guy that could come in and fill that role for a year. And maybe you draft his successor this year. There are other scenarios around the league that kind of make similar sense to Froholt, but dude, they need in my opinion, a stable veteran proven center in 2026. Like, I would be much more comfortable if Decker steps away with a highly drafted rookie at left tackle and a veteran at center than vice versa.
You know who Froholt's friends with, Will? Frank Ragnow.
Yeah.
Put it on the resume. College teammates, good friends. I think Ragnow might be as big as they probably stood in each other's weddings. Who knows? Hunted together.
Yeah. They actually got in the center stance on the altar together.
Now, before we end the show here for our Dog and Pony Show Brewing pick of the week, I would like to ask you guys, because by the time we do our show, we already know who's in the Super Bowl. So give me your guys' picks for the weekend out of the NFC and the AFC. You have Seahawks, Rams, and you have Patriots, Broncos, no Bo Nix before we get out of here. Shout out to Kyle, by the way. I know I couldn't make it to the event last week, but I'm going back there soon. And we're actually trying to plan something for the draft. But you guys went all to on Sunday, the customer appreciation night. You guys all went there?
Yeah, I couldn't make it, but
very appreciated.
Beer was awesome. Yeah. But yeah, give me your guys.
Kyle hooked us up with some glasses, and I think Justin and I both won a raffle there, so it was a good time. Shout out, Doug and Pony.
Sounds rigged.
Honestly.
Script writers over at Dog and Pony.
In terms of a pick, I mean, I think the AFC is probably easy. It sucks that Bo Nix got hurt, man. I think that would have been a good game otherwise. I just don't have trust in Sidham right now. But I'll go Pats in the AFC. NFC, man, that's a game that a lot of people were looking forward to happening. I'm glad it materialized this way. Something tells me, you know, I think the Seahawks are the more complete team. That defense, man, is so nasty. But I'm going Stafford. I think I got to go Stafford over Darnold. That's like, because these teams played so close in the regular season. If the separator is Matthew Stafford, and you go back to that last game, the last time they played, it took like a BS two-point conversion attempt or conversion to send the Seahawks home with a win. Give me the better quarterback in a game like this in the playoffs when you get deep in these postseason runs. So I'll go Rams, Pats. Anybody? Who's next?
Far away, Justin.
I'll take this. Because I agree with Colton, so I'll just get mine off the way. I'll go Patriots and Rams. I'm going with Matthew Stafford, so those are my picks.
Look, I'm going with what I said. My heart was in this playoffs last week. Give me Sam Darnold's redemption tour continuing. Oh. And you know what? Take that man's oblique, and he doesn't care. Put it in a blender. Put it back in. He's ready to go. There's no way in hell I'm picking against the Patriots. So, like, and that's – it's almost as preposterous as Indiana winning the national championship is the Patriots being back in the Super Bowl after last season. But here we are, Drake May, and what are you going to do about it? But give me Darnold. I want to see it.
Darnold's going to be like 13 for 24 with 140 passing yards, a touchdown, a pick, and they're going to win by like 20.
That's right, because they're going to have two return touchdowns with their trade deadline acquisition.
It's tough for the QB wins, people. I'm going to be honest. Yeah. That's tough for the QB wins.
No. Oh, dude. Shout out Stafford for that throw in overtime. I don't know if you guys have seen the end zone view, but he's from the opposite hash, and he just slings that thing to the far sideline to Devontae, who makes an incredible catch. But I don't know how many other quarterbacks are making that throw in the NFL. I think they get the job done against Seattle. I feel like their season flipped ever since that fourth quarter meltdown against Seattle, and I think they'll redeem themselves for that in the NFC Championship. Obviously, the AFC, it just feels like the Patriots are going to walk through Jared Stidham. The Patriots did not suffer nearly long enough after ruling the NFL for two decades. They were down for like 2-3 years, and now they're probably back in the Super Bowl. Just seems kind of unfair. I do want to point this out about the teams that are still standing. This was actually sent to me today by our buddy John Neo. Shout out Neo. Read him in the Detroit News. Catch him on Fox 2. But we were just kind of talking about the threads that sort of tie all these teams together and what the best teams need. And the simplest answer is you need your good players to stay healthy. Like there's a metric that converts, this is by Sports Info Solutions, that converts games missed into total points missed. So either points scored or points prevented. And the currency they use is EPA, Colton's proprietary stat, EPA. And if you look at the teams that are least injured this year by total points missed, it's the Patriots at 1, it's the Rams at 2, it's the Seahawks at 3, and it's the Broncos at 5. The simplest answer when it comes to uniting these teams, what do all the best teams have? They have good, healthy players, and that obviously needs to change for the Lions next year.
That's a great point, Will. Great stat.
Well, appreciate all you for watching. You guys, before you leave, please hit the like button on the stream and subscribe. We just hit 3,000 subscribers, so we're continuing to grow. We'll be back next week for another episode of Lions Collective, but until then, we will catch you all.